You're gonna need to save up and continue.
Esto es Comando Z,
donde el fracaso no es opcional, pero el éxito es obligatorio. Con ustedes, Lace Curbelo.
Aquí, Lace Curbelo. Today we will be talking about a topic that everyone thinks that they know, but the reality is that just some designers actually understand it. Also, if you are enjoying what you are listening and you are learning with us or just catching up, please give us a review on Apple Podcasts or Facebook. Also, don't forget to share this episode with your coworkers or friends that need some of this valuable information. The episode of today, Bias in Design and Tech with Tanasha Lalcock. Tanasha is the founder of Be the Mindset Change, a consulting company committed to implementing and improving organization DEI initiatives through development, psychology, growth, mindset principles to help mitigate biased decision-making. She has a bachelor's degree in communication and dual postgraduate education in psychology and industrial organization psychology. Tanasha is also a certified DEI practitioner. She's a lover of all things psychology and enjoys using her continuing education to help others move forward in their life with both grace and the mindset of focus on curiosity. What you will learn from Tanasha in this episode: demystify bias. You will understand the concept of bias in a clear and accessible manner. Designer daily reality. We will explore the crucial role of bias in the everyday work of designers, shedding light on its impact on the creation of products and services. Avoiding common pitfalls. We will dive into the misconceptions and wrong approaches towards bias in design, gaining insight into what designers might be doing wrong and how to navigate those challenges. Without further ado, our conversation with Tanasha about bias in design and tech. Así que, dale oído. Aquí, Lace Curbelo, en otro episodio más de Command Z Podcast. Today with us, I have the pleasure to actually do this interview in English because we have a special guest, and her name is Tanasha. Welcome, Tanasha, to Command Z Podcast. How are you?
Good morning, Lacey. Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here this morning, excited for this opportunity to chat with you today. So thank you for having me.
Thank you for saying yes. So first of all, I want to introduce you to our audience. So please let us know who you are, what you do for a living, and why we are interviewing you.
All right, excellent. Well, my name is Tanasha Lalcock, and I actually, for a living, I have a consultancy business. So I do diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging consulting. I have a dual postgraduate education in both general psychology and industrial and organizational psychology. So I understand the individual side of psychology as well as how individuals affect and impact organizations and those structures and how they function on the day to day. So that's a little bit about me. I live in sunny Phoenix, Arizona. Love it here, except for this time of year starts to get a little warm, but I cannot complain when fall gets here. That's when I really love it here the most.
I will bet that we are a little bit hotter than Arizona.
Well, you have the humidity. We don't have any humidity. So if we get a humid day, we're like,
Puerto Rico right now is almost like an oven. I will say that. I will say that. So,
but you also have the water, and we don't have that here in Phoenix.
Well, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that I'm in Iceland, that I can vacation the entire year. Sorry. So, our audience, maybe it's asking themselves, like, why we are interviewing our psychologist, a person that knows about psychology, right? So today we will be talking about biases and how important is this for designers. And I know that sounds a little bit weird, but it's really important in this episode to talk about biases. So first, let's define what is a bias.
Okay, so when we're thinking about a bias and how that functions in our brains, the first thing I always like to let people know is that currently there's this kind of element of shame around biased thinking, and we see that a lot with organizations, particularly with diversity work. You know, we're removing bias, we're eliminating bias. Well, first thing I want to let all of your listeners know is that bias is a natural function of the brain because our brains do not have the cognitive bandwidth to engage in thorough decision-making for every decision that we make. When we're going to move a part of our body, we don't stop and take a couple of minutes to think about how we're going to move. Our brain goes into autopilot mode. And so bias is just a way for our brains to function at optimum capacity because we engage in so much decision making. They estimate we make around 35,000 decisions per day.
That's a lot.
Exactly. When you think about that number, our brains do not have the capacity to sit and thoroughly go through every decision we're going to make. So bias, when we look at that, especially when we're talking about getting into this in the design sphere. So with bias, we're thinking about a couple of things. A bias can be a partiality that we have towards something. So an inclination, predisposition that is either for or against something. And that would typically be thought of as something that could be a prejudice. A bias in design, when we think about specifically the design sphere, could be some sort of systematic type of error that arises during our sampling process when we're collecting that data, when we're doing a data analysis. So those are kind of the ways in which bias comes into play in this sphere, this realm of influence.
I want to add that for me as a UX designer, I try to explain bias as the way that we actually use mental models. Like, we have this mental model of how to use a hamburger menu on an app, right? We see those three lines and we know what it means and we know what we want to do with those three lines. And we have expectations of how it will be the interaction if we press those three lines, right? And actually, that's what happens when we have a sort type of biases. And I always have this conversation, and I love that some designers don't agree with me, that stereotypes exist because we actually use it, right? And it's not bad to have it, and we need to be careful, but it's important that we acknowledge that it exists for a reason.
Right. That's totally true. And it really is one of those things. It can be very hard for people to accept that they engage in biased thinking. But the reality is that we all do. And so that's one of those things where I really impress upon people the importance of giving themselves some grace, because I'll say it, I've said it, and I'll say it multiple times during this conversation. Bias is a natural functioning of the brain. It's really when we don't slow down in our decision making and we're making decisions that can have a broader impact, which is, of course, going to be the case in design, because when something is being designed, it's being designed for such a large community of people. And you have to consider people who may have marginalized identities that you do not have as the designer. So how do you make that? Pardon me, my allergies. How do you make that design inclusive for everyone? So those are the ways that we really have to learn to slow down in that decision making. I like to say, the higher the impact of the decision that we're making, the more we need to slow down in our thinking. Because if we're engaging in that automatic thought process, bias is going to be more likely to come into play in our decision making.
Definitely. So that's why I want to ask you, why do designers need to know and, I mean, understand bias and how it comes to play when we actually are doing our daily work on products and services that we made? Like, we need to acknowledge that exists, but also how this affects our work.
Well, that is a wonderful question, Lacey. And it really makes a difference, because with designers, when you are putting something out into the world, like we think about UX design, you are talking about a user experience. So once you put something that you have created out into the world, you don't have full control or autonomy over who's going to use the product or whatever design you have developed. And that is why it's so important to slow down in our thinking, because once you put that product out there, it's going to reach communities, populations that someone as a designer may not have considered, because we do tend to think about people who are like us. That is another one of those things that's a natural thing in how our minds work. We tend to think about people who are similar to ourselves. And I've heard people say it before. I'm sure you've heard it. People will say, you don't know what you don't know. And so it's one of those things where if you're unaware of the needs of a community because you don't belong to that community, how do you create content that is going to best serve that community?
Mm-hmm.
So that's really why it's so important to think about areas where we could hold bias when someone is engaging in InDesign in the UX field, because you want to make sure that whatever you're putting out into the world is going to be something that anyone from a various varied community could use, and that would be functionable for that individual. So you have to think about needs outside of your own and outside of just the specific groups to which you belong.
I know this is a broader topic and we can be like hours and hours of this one, but that's why it's so important, representation. And when you don't have a diverse team, this kind of things happen, right? Because probably if I'm on a team when everyone is Puerto Rican, probably our biases are similar. So And I just put in like an example with myself, you know. So if we see this in different dynamics in different companies, it's really important representation. What happened when you start doing a pride campaign and nobody in your on your design team is part of the LGBT community? You know?
Exactly. So how do you best serve those communities, even with your biased thinking? I mean, when we think about, I always like to use the example of what we've seen with face recognition technology. And you see how so many companies have worked to put together this amazing technology, but you see that there was some bias in that design because it doesn't pick up skin tones like mine. I am a Black woman. I am a highly melanated Black woman. And so when I try to use something that is a face recognition, and my husband uses it, and my husband is white, and it works for him, but it doesn't work for my skin tone, then you can see the result of the bias in that design, because that wasn't considered. Because if everybody in the room has almost the same skin tone and you're creating something that's doing face recognition, it could work for everyone in that room. But once you bring in a more melanated skin tone, then you may see that the effectiveness of that facial recognition software begins to dwindle. And that's why it's so important to have diversity in design, in all areas of design, because when you're designing for all people, you need to have a lot more representation in the room.
Yep. And that also applies, I mean, you say it, applies to any part of the design process, but also to research. Like, I've been in different companies where it says, like, we have a diverse pool of participants on the research. And when you say, like, you even have, like, people with diverse abilities, like, people that have, that is part of accessibility issues, and they are like, no. And it's like, okay, you don't have the entire, you know?
Right.
The moment when you are saying what is your user is the moment when you are actually acknowledged that you are segregating people.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
I know exactly. It's a little bit like, again, we can be hours and hours of this conversation. I know that we need a target audience, and that's great because you need to actually, again, monetize and everything. But if you want a diverse and like inclusive product, you need to think about all these also parts. So
yes, you really do. And the other piece of that is what you're really describing is like a biased sampling. So where you're going to be selecting people for a study or considering groups of or populations of people as users, but it's got to be representative. And so that's really where the crux of that comes in, is and trying to veer away from any sort of bias in your sampling and making sure, because if you don't have a representative sample when you're thinking of something that you're going to design, you've already brought bias into the process just from the start.
Yep. So now I want to actually enter to the nitty-picky, you know, like the specific of biases. Let's start talking about a specific bias. Let's define observer bias. That is, you ask me, if you ask me, I mean, I think all their UX researchers have one in one way or another. So let's talk about that one.
Okay. So observer bias, it sounds very, very straightforward. really has to do with expectations, beliefs, personal preferences that a researcher, or in this case, a designer would have, that could unintentionally influence how they're taking data or what they're deciding to do when they're conducting a study, when they're building a material, when they're designing an app, anything along those lines. Because when someone is designing, they go into it with a set of beliefs, and we all have our beliefs about the world. But what you have to be careful of in design is assuming that you know what people want. So what you want to avoid is assuming, well, okay, so I believe I know what's going to best serve the LGBTQIA2S plus community or the LGBTQ plus community. There are so many different ways to say it. I always like to use the 2S because that brings in the two-spirit community. So the LGBTQIA2S plus community. But thinking about that, when you are designing something, the importance of speaking to those communities so you can avoid that observer bias, because just reading a book about the community could teach you something, but it's not going to be the same. It's not going to have the enriched benefit of speaking to individuals in that community who have those very real lived experiences. So that's a really great way to avoid observer bias, is instead of thinking that you know and that you have the information, really taking the time to talk to the communities that you're trying to serve and make sure that whatever it is you're designing will be representative. And people will find in those conversations and speaking to members of the community, one way that it can really combat observer bias is that you will hear different things from people that you'll pick up on. And someone may have a great idea or make a suggestion for something that you as the designer didn't necessarily think of because it wasn't a need that you were aware needed to be filled.
I'm super excited to talk about this, and I would love to give my personal experience. Actually, I remember start working with the LGBTQ plus community, and I'm part of the community, and sometimes I past observer bias, right? I was like, I know what my community wants to know, what the necessities, right? And then I was like, why I don't ask? I'm just assuming. That's so horrible. And sometimes we say, like, you are not the user, and that's completely fine, and we need to be empathic and be in the shoes of the user. But at the same time, I was like, I'm part of the community. I can do this. I was like, no, you need more information. And when I started doing research, I was so surprised that, okay, maybe I know my people, quote unquote, like the lesbian area. But sometimes when I tried to do a pro for example, the trans community, it was a complete whole story. So it's super important to actually have this experience to be really into and actually educate ourselves, even if we know the topic, even if we knew the community, even if we are part of the community.
Right. Even if we belong to those communities, that is so true. Because I think about my different varying intersectional identities. You know, I'm a Black woman. I'm a queer person. I'm also neurodivergent. I have another invisible physical disability. Like, I think about all of those different identities that I have swirling around and the various needs that I may have. But within the respective communities that I belong to, there are so many other people who are going to have different needs. So even for me, as a woman who is queer, as a queer woman, I would not assume that I know what my, I like to say, siblings in other areas of the LGBTQIA2S plus community need. I would not be someone who could speak for a woman who's trans because I am a cisgender woman. And so in order to avoid that bias for myself, I like to go to the source. I mean, that's really where you get the best information. You don't assume what people need, because the reality is you would assume for a child, but you would also listen to a child, at least one would hope. You would also listen to a child in terms of what they need, because kids are very smart. So why would you assume for adults that you know what they need better than they do. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you really want to get it right and build something that's going to be meaningful for people, you get the best information when you actually talk to the people whose lives you're going to be impacting. And when you have individuals from those communities on your design team.
Exactly. Representation, people. Representation.
Again, representation is everything. That's where it's at.
Again, I know that we can be hours talking about this particular that I will say now, but I want to actually make a caveat here. I heard a lot of people that say, like, Lacey, like, the communities, it's segregating so much, and it's so many parts that I cannot follow in all these, like, definitions and terms and, like, different categories. And I always says, like, that's why it's so important to understand what is intersectionality. Like, we as a humans, we are not just one side of the coin, right? We are like onions. We have layers of layers of layers of different things that affect our lives. And it's not okay. Like we are segregating ourselves and putting us in a box. It's just like to say and communicate our feelings and the way that we live our lives so people can create products and services in a better way. Because like several of the different generations don't do this. It's why we have this kind of problems now. So
right.
It's
right.
So important to us to actually communicate correctly. For example, as you mentioned, in my case, I'm a Puerto Rican, I mean, Latina woman, part of the LGBT community. So I have three different I have three different layers that affects mm-hmm. my life in different products and services that I can consume. So it's so important that do that caveat here, because I heard that a lot, that people say, like, I cannot follow all those things. It's like, you don't need to follow, but you need to understand it.
That's right. And at least take in the knowledge, because the reality is that the world is changing so much, and especially in design and technology, things can change so quickly. And so in order to be at the forefront in terms of what is being developed and put out into the world, it has to be representative, because today's world, especially when we look at some of the different generations, like I'm a Gen Xer, I still have an expectation of representation in anything that I'm involved in, anything that I'm using. I want to see that it's inclusive. I'm one of those people, when I'm on LinkedIn, I'm like, are people using the camel case hashtags? Like, do they know to capitalize the first letter of each word that they put when they use a hashtag? Because it makes it more inclusive for people who may have dyslexia or people who use different readers for them. That is a consideration that people have to make. So it's always important to keep taking in new knowledge. You should never get to a point where you feel like you know it all, because when you feel like you know everything, that, once again, is going to bring so much bias into your decision making. You have to take the time and put in the effort to really stay informed, because it will make all the difference in what you can put out into the world.
So now I want to actually go to another different bias. And I mean, sometimes we as designers have overconfidence bias. So can you explain that one?
Yes, overconfidence bias. This is one of the most fascinating biases to me. So with overconfidence bias, it is really where someone thinks that they have a higher skill level or more knowledge than they may actually possess. And so when someone has that overconfidence bias, they can kind of lose perspective of their level of ability. It doesn't mean that the individual may not be capable, but they may overestimate their capabilities. And that will impact their decision-making and this is important in design, their ability to evaluate their own work. So it's one of the things that they do when they research overconfidence bias is they will measure someone's overconfidence bias by asking them, you know, a question or having them perform a task. And also asking that same individual how confident they are, you know, that they've performed that task well. And then they can determine if the individual has an overconfidence bias, if the person's self-assessment and their actual results, their actual level of competency don't match. So with overconfidence bias, that's one that we want to be very, very mindful of. And it can show up in three major ways. One is overestimating. So where you're overestimating your performance or your judgment, thinking that you have a handle on something where you may not necessarily have all the information to make that decision. So where you're overestimating your ability to be the person who does that thing or who makes that decision. Another way that we can see overconfidence bias show up is overplacement. So someone overrating themselves compared to others. You know, everyone who's in design wants to think that they're a great designer. And that's a really, really good thing. However, it's important to also know the ways in which you can continue to grow as a designer and the ways in which you can continue to learn. So that's how we can kind of avoid that overplacement, like placing ourselves above others, and recognize that we're all learning. Anyone who's involved in the design process, anyone who's involved in life, you know, we're all at a place of learning. We're never at a place where we know everything. We've taken in every piece of knowledge that we could possibly take in. The third way that this overconfidence bias will show up is excessive confidence in someone, in your knowledge. So thinking that, once again, you know everything, that you have all of the knowledge that you need. If you're designing for a specific group, if you're designing for a group of individuals who have a particular disability, and you think you've taken in all the knowledge that you could possibly take in, but you haven't talked to anyone in that group, then that would be an example of an overconfidence bias in that situation.
That was me in the previous example.
Exactly.
That was me doing a pro for the LGBTQ community and saying, like, I know my people.
Right. I belong to this community. I know what we need.
Exactly. You know, one of the things that I'm really like of this one that I want to explain a little bit, it's when we do testing in UX design, and we say, like, we know how people will actually use this, so we will not test this particular because it's so simple. We know already how people actually would use it. And then it's like, just test it, because sometimes people do weird things and you cannot assume. I remember one time I was doing a testing, and we was having a disagreement with the team, and so part of the team was saying, like, we will not do a testing about a CTA, a change in a button color, because we know that this will not change or affect the use of the product. And the other half of the team, it was like, let's do it, because, like, apparently it's not working. And it was so funny, like, people confronting themselves and saying, like, no, you don't know, like, you are assuming things. And the other one's like, no, this is so simple. And it was like, people, maybe we are a little bit overconfident about this. Just test it. You know, test it.
Yes, so true. And it's one of those things where, like, one of the things we see in the overconfidence bias realm, one of the effects that we'll see, it's called the Dunning-Kruger effect. And it's where someone thinks that they have a higher level of skill in an area that where they may not actually be particularly skilled or have the education, the knowledge, anything along those lines. And we've seen a perfect example of this in the world at large when COVID hit. We saw a perfect example of the Dunning-Kruger effect taking place, because we had, you know, immunologists and doctors from all over the world telling us as citizens of the world what we needed to do. And then we saw people going, well, no, I don't think we should do that. Or I read this article that said, and in my mind, I'm going, but hold on a minute. Because I'm not a doctor, I am not someone who's worked for the Center for Disease Control for decades, I am going to defer to the knowledge of the people who are the experts in that area. And that is one of the best ways to avoid an overconfidence bias and avoid that Dunning-Kruger effect, is to ask yourself, do you really have the knowledge in that area? Do you have a belief? Or do you have concrete researched information? That's a great way to avoid the Dunning-Kruger effect. And anytime I see it in play, I'm like, ooh, that's interesting. It's just so fascinating to me. Because I think one of the ways that we can show our intelligence is by listening to and deferring to people who have knowledge and expertise that we may not possess. And that's okay, because we can still learn from those individuals. And the point is to really have the knowledge, to be able to learn about it. It's okay to not be the person who's the expert on every single issue, because no one's the expert on every single issue. We all have our pockets of knowledge and education and expertise.
Yep. So I know that Tanasha and I needs like 3 or 4 hours to do this conversation. Apparently, we don't have those 4 hours.
I could probably take 6 hours.
Now we'll be talking about one of the biases that I hate, but it's so important to talk about it. Gender bias. Again, I think for this one we need an hour, but we don't have to. We don't have the time. Sorry, Tanasha. Can you explain the gender bias quick?
Yes. Okay. So with gender bias, this is where we're going to see some of those stereotypical beliefs about individuals on the basis of their sex, their gender, specifically as it relates to some differential treatment. And the way that we see gender bias showing up in today's world is just so fascinating, because we have existed in a world where gender is on a binary. Mm-hmm. And the reality is that that is not how gender works. So when we think about bias, gender bias, I think about things like, as a cisgender woman, what is it like for a woman who's trans when she's shopping for a dress? Or what is it like for an individual who is non-binary when they are looking to purchase an item, looking for a particular article of clothing? You'll see that some fashion companies will actually, and I love this because this actually gets into design, some fashion companies will actually have on their websites, they will say that items are unisex, or they will list that items could be worn. They won't have it necessarily divided out into man and woman. They'll just have the items listed on their website. So you'll just see the clothing that's available. You take a peek at each piece of clothing you're interested in. Think about if you would like the way that the item might fit you, you know, that kind of thing. That's a way to counteract gender bias, because there are more than two genders. And that is just the reality. And so when I see gender bias show up, I always kind of pause and kind of take a moment, because I think about how something may seem inclusive for me, how it may not be inclusive for the next person. And one of the interesting things with UX design is that UX design is I think it's 53%, I want to say, was the last figure that I saw of UX designers are female. And so when we think about design and we think about user experience, like, yay, it's so important to have a mix, because it shouldn't be all dominated by males or all dominated by females, because we really need non-binary people who are actively involved in UX design, because they're going to bring such a unique perspective, and they will be able to pick up on that gender bias when it shows up. And that's why having those voices and having that representation in the room is so important, because people can pick up on those blind spots that other individuals might not think of. Because if it's not a need that you have, you may not be aware that it's a need for someone else. Mm-hmm. So one of the best ways to counter that gender bias is representation.
Again,
we're going to just keep saying it, Leisha.
Representation. Now I want to be the devil advocate, because I always believe that the only way that we can actually change how the game is in the world, it's actually talking in the language of the people that are like on the top of the game. So CEOs, marketeers, specifically marketeers and people from advertising, if you are losing money because one gender is not buying your product, what happens if you do it completely inclusive? You have more market. Hey, good news. I remember, I have a great example that I do in a conference. Actually, you was on that conference. It was like about the razor, the shaving industry, right? So in the beginning, like long ago, it was for only for men, and how they actually put the market even bigger, including women, right? Like saying to the woman, you know what, you need to you shave your legs, you know what, you need to shave your armpits. And it was like, woman's, oh my god, I need to shave myself now, right? And now have that bigger market. So what mm-hmm. happened if your brands are not inclusive? You are losing money. Just saying. It's the same.
You really are. And I'm always surprised when businesses or organizations don't think about that. Like, if people are concerned with the bottom line in a business, why wouldn't you want to be more inclusive? Because then you can serve a broader swath community of individuals, which is how you're going to make more money.
Yep,
so it's always surprising when there's that kind of pushback about having more inclusion, because more inclusion brings more opportunity, not just for individuals in the community, but for all of these, also for all of these various businesses and organizations.
Yep.
So you should want your business to be more inclusive.
I always try to bring it to the table, because the majority of the teams, it's great to have this kind of conversation, because we know that this is good for people. But sometimes marketeers, managers, CEOs, like stakeholders says, like, I don't care about doing the good things. I want to monetize. So let's hear this another side of the story. You can monetize being inclusive. You can monetize being accessible. You know, it's just saying.
just if anyone's listening, if anyone's interested, if anyone wanted to know. That's an excellent point. That's so true,
Lacey. Yep. So last but not least, I want to address confirmation bias and why it's so important to be aware of this type of bias.
Oh, this is another one of my favorites. I don't know what it is with me and biases. I just find them so fascinating. So with the confirmation bias, what we see with a confirmation bias essentially is when someone gathers evidence or information that goes right in line and confirms their expectations. So you could have, say you have 10 pieces of information, but you only choose the 5 pieces of information that go along specifically with what you already believe or what your expectations already are. So in confirmation bias, we'll see people emphasizing or kind of pursuing that supporting evidence that goes along with whatever belief or idea they hold, and dismissing or, you know, failing to look for the whole scope of factual information. So that's what we'll see with confirmation bias. So let's say someone has designed an app and they believe that that app is going to be inclusive for everyone. And they go through reviews of the app and they only look at the reviews that are positive and dismiss the reviews where people are saying there's a function or a need that they have that's not being served by that app. That would be a perfect example of a confirmation bias. Because at the end of the day, we all want to think we know what we're talking about. We all want to think that we're right about whatever it is we're thinking, we're feeling, especially in design. If someone's working in design, you want to create the best design that you possibly can. So it's hard to take in information that could tell you there's still additional work that you need to do. So to avoid confirmation bias, one of the things that we want to make sure we do is take in all of the information. We don't want to say, well, we've already talked to that community and we didn't get anything good from what they had to say. Oh, of course, there's rich information in what that community had to say. So to avoid that confirmation bias, we really have to try to take a full picture of all the information. If I have an opinion about something based on something I've read, what I've experienced, I will actually go looking for information that contradicts the opinion that I have, because I want to make sure I am taking in all of the information. You really want to look at both sides. You don't want to just assume, once again, that you have all of the knowledge and that's all you need. And, oh, well, I'm going to dismiss, you know, something that's anti what I'm for because I don't like the way it makes me feel. Or I don't really want to go back to the drawing board on my design. So to avoid that confirmation bias, we really have to make sure that we're being mindful and taking in as much information as we can so we can get a full picture. That's a really easy way to avoid confirmation bias.
I love when people say to me, we need to change the colors because it's not accessible. And okay, let's see the metrics. And it's like just 0.1%. And the person's like, it says here. It says here, the blue, it's not good. This is not the blue that I want to. Oh, that's the blue you don't want to.
You're right.
Using this data to confirm it that you don't want this color. It's not that it's not accessible. It's like, right. You don't want to the color.
Right. You have a preference for one shade of blue over the other.
Yeah. So we are almost finishing, but we have a couple of questions that are part of the Come and See podcast that are really important that, you know, Tanasha, you live also the experience to be here. So we want to hear from you, your horror stories. So let us write your horror story and what you learned from that story. What in your career you will do Come and See and going back?
Oh, when I think about my career, something that I would go back and change, you know, I will say, frankly, it can be difficult being a Black woman in the workplace. And as a highly educated Black woman, at least I consider myself to be highly educated, it has been difficult at times to just be mistreated and talked down to and condescended to. And I think that there have been some times in my career where I have accepted roles that were, I don't want to say beneath me, but beneath my level of ability. So if I could go back, I think I would have pushed myself more to take on higher roles, provided that I was given the opportunity, because of course someone has to give you the opportunity. But there were times, for instance, when my kids were younger, where I would pass up a higher role because I had to balance raising my children. And so for me, sometimes I wish I would have made a different decision there and taken on the additional responsibility to grow my career even more.
So in terms of what you learned about this horror story, because it's a little bit hard to hear, you will say like, sometimes people, and I would say designers too, like, they think that they don't have the skills. They think that they are not prepared yet for that kind of position and just be confident with the skills that you have. And I think, and I'm adding this to your life experience, I want to hear it from you, but I remember one time that I was having an interview with Xiomara. She's a great developer, and we have it on the podcast. We can put the link later. And she mentioned that sometimes women specifically, they see job posting and says like, oh man, they have like 8 bullets here and I just like accomplished maybe 3 on my career. I will not apply. And then comes a man and say like, I only have 1. I will apply. She said it in a joke way, right? In a funny way. But the reality is that sometimes women, we are less confident in the professional scenario. Like, in your opinion, what do you learn from this story?
I feel like what I have learned is to have more belief in myself and in my abilities and not to be afraid to take a risk. Because one of the things that I focus on in my work as a consultant that makes my consultancy different is training people on how to engage their growth mindset as opposed to being in their fixed mindset. And it was very fixed mindset thinking of me to say, well, you know, I could take that role, but I'm not sure if I'm prepared for that. Maybe it's not time for me yet. That's very fixed mindset thinking. My growth mindset would have said, go for it, because you've worked hard for it. You deserve it. So I always remind myself of that now, to really believe in my capabilities. I just moderated my first panel ever last week, and apparently I did a really great job at it and got tremendous feedback. But sometimes it can be hard, because like we talked about overconfidence bias, I feel like I have a underconfidence bias.
Well, congrats for that. And I also have a comment for that. It's that I remember one of my boss, Sophia, she said to me, if you see a pool like full of sharks, just swim. Like, I really love the challenges, and I try to encourage people to not be afraid of challenges. And it, I know it can be like scary, but you need to jump and try everything. That's the way that you can learn. That's the best way to learn, right? And
yeah, you're right.
Here in Come and See, we don't have like fear to mistakes, you know?
Right. And that is growth mindset thinking, not being afraid to make a mistake. I always say I don't make mistakes. I learn lessons.
Hey.
It just sounds kinder. It just sounds so much kinder to myself. Like, oh, it didn't work out, but you know what? I learned a lesson. So, because when you learn a lesson, you have something that you can take forward with you, you know, something positive that you can take out of it. So I give myself a little grace there. No mistakes, just lessons learned.
Yep. Almost finalizing the interview, but fallando lo fácil, basically this translate of what are the easy mistakes that designers make when they don't realize bias?
Ooh, I would say easy mistakes would be moving forward on a design when you have other people in the room, especially if they're representative of groups you don't belong to, and they're telling you that there is a need that is not being addressed. I would say that would be one of the easiest mistakes that a designer could make, would be not taking in that information from other people on their team, especially if those individuals belong to the groups that the designer does not. It's so important to listen to those voices and think about that representation and being inclusive in design.
Yes, people, representation and listen, be able to listen. So why would you copy and paste? Tell us that the good things that you think it's necessary to copy and people to paste in their careers.
Ooh, I would say copy and paste for sure, confidence. And not overconfidence.
No.
Not overconfidence, because we want to avoid that overconfidence bias. But just having a belief in your capabilities and in knowing that if there's a skill that you don't have, that you can acquire that skill. You can learn. Copy and paste learning. Always be learning. Like, never stop learning. I read so many books. I read books physically. I listen to books on Audible because I am always taking in knowledge. It's important to be able to speak from a place of education and not just a feeling or a belief. And that once again goes back to mindset. And that's how, you know, you maintain a growth mindset, is to keep taking in that information. So copy and paste your belief in your capabilities and your belief that any capabilities that you don't have, you can learn and you can grow those capabilities.
Thank you so much, Tanasha. This has been an amazing interview, and I know that we need six more hours.
We do.
But thank you so much for educating our audience and sharing your knowledge.
Thank you so much for having me here, Leishi. It's been such a pleasure.
Será hasta la próxima, amigos.
Puedes buscar más episodios a través de nuestra página web comanzetapodcast.com. O seguirnos a través de Instagram, Twitter, Spotify, Apple Podcasts y Google Podcasts como Command Z Podcast, o en Facebook como Command Z Podcast PR. Las opiniones vertidas en este programa son de exclusiva responsabilidad de quienes las emiten y no representan a Command Z Podcast ni a sus auspiciadores.